Hi, this is Mike.
And Nathan.
And this is the Third Option Podcast.
This podcast is for individuals who are seeking biblical truth in a noisy, chaotic world of opinions and points of view. Every day we hear politicians, pastors, coworkers, family members, neighbors, and the internet tell us how we should think and what to believe.
Our goal is to give you a third option based on the ancient truths of the Bible. Welcome again to this week's podcast. All right, sorry.
So we're going to talk about the unknown commandments, and we're kind of thinking about maybe doing a series.
Yeah.
Unknown commandment series, which maybe there's some of these, some people probably know, but this one's
definitely unknown. Never heard of it before until Nathan.
Maybe there's like, some. There's maybe. Probably people out there.
Yep. There's a few people who have heard this.
Anyways, unknown commandment, be quiet. And so this sounds odd. It's like, well, what do they mean by this?
Yeah.
Being quiet. What are they talking about?
I was definitely someone who was not considered quiet.
That's what you were saying, yeah.
Like, my whole life as a child, I was yelled at like every day to be quiet and use your indoor voice.
That's right.
Because I'm a very loud individual. Even as an adult sometimes, my wife like looks at me and is like, Mike, you're being loud.
Being too loud. You're embarrassing the
That's
family,
right? And then, you know how genes work, like genetics. My children now are the loudest kids. There's this thing called the beach scream. It's like where my kids just scream out of nowhere for no reason. And we're getting medical help
for it. Yelling.
So yeah, I'm a very loud individual. Even with like our mics every week, I'm like always trying to turn
adjusting
me down
because sound.
I'm just too loud.
Too loud.
So I'm right now. I'm
so Mike's trying to be quiet.
I'm trying to be quiet.
Yeah, I feel bad for little Mike back in the day.
Yeah, little Mike had a rough time.
Man,
always being yelled at for being loud. Yeah.
Yep, the kid who talks way too loud.
Oh yeah, I was like the chubby kid. I was also the loud kid, and sometimes I was the stinky kid.
Oh man,
it wasn't a good time. I'll tell you that. But I turned out okay.
That's right.
I've done all right.
Good Lord.
That's right. The Lord saved me from those days. I'm still a chubby, loud adult. But whatever.
All right. So we'll dive into this. This is going to be a good example of a word study. And this is something I think is a good technique that people should use when they're for a different way. You know, if you're looking for something to change up in your Bible study.
Yeah.
A word study is a good choice to do.
Mm-hmm.
But some views of being quiet today we're first going to go over are, I would say, some commonly thought views of the word quiet in English usage is basically has to do with sound.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Either no noise or little noise. Sometimes it has a different like nuance to it as like... you know, they're of a quiet disposition, right? If I'm using it that way, it kind of takes away the idea of just having to do with sound. There's something personal about me. Maybe I'm just sort of like a shy person, you know, type of thing. But mostly, if I say to be quiet, most people are thinking, you know, it has to do with sound.
Yeah.
Unless there was something really changed by the context of how I use that. Another thing is that monks have a vow of silence. I don't know if anybody's heard of that before, but there is the Abbey of Gethsemane in Kentucky, I remember hearing about this because I used to live in Kentucky. So my dad had visited this abbey before with his brother when they were younger. And so there's this abbey of monks in Kentucky, and they have a vow of silence. So it's just quiet.
Yeah.
Like a lot of the time is spent
in silence. It sounds amazing.
And people devote their life, and it's just quiet. And they have, like, gardens and paths and stuff you can walk through and stuff like that. But, you know, a large majority of the time is in silence.
Huh.
You know, and because you're in prayer a lot. You're reading scripture a lot. There are times when they talk. But for the majority of the time, you know, it's in silence. And there's a famous friar from this monastery, this abbey, and his name's Thomas Merton. I don't know if any of our listeners have ever heard of him, but he's pretty famous. Okay. Like, a lot of his writings are pretty famous and well-known. And he lived here for a large portion of his life, you know, as one of the monks there. And so the vow of silence is something done. So that's kind of another nuance to it, you know. But again, it kind of still has to do with sound.
Yep.
You're not talking. And I would say just in Christianity, this is probably, you know, not talked about much at all. We were talking about earlier, who would know about this command? You know, it's something Christians are to be. They're to be quiet. You know, if I was to say that, like, are you being quiet in your life?
Yeah.
People would be confused.
I always think of, like, a moment of silence. That's when it's like a time when we'd be quiet. Sometimes we do it in church. It'd be like
being respectful prayer. About something.
Yep. Or someone passes, they'll be like, let's do a moment of silence for like a minute. And really, you recognize that a minute seems like forever when you're silent, especially as a child.
Yeah.
If you tell a child to be silent for a minute, or I think about the game we play in the back seat when we're like, all right, who can
be quiet the longest?
Yeah. It's the best game ever when you have kids because you could actually get your kids to be quiet for a few minutes.
Peace.
Yes.
So imagine being a monk and just being silent for ever.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
Yep.
And then, the world around us is noisy and we never stop to be quiet.
It's so noisy.
We're definitely in the age of like, I got to have something planned at all times. Yes, like I can't just be stopped.
Every day I get home. Not only is the TV on, but every kid has their device.
Every device.
And every device has volumes on, too.
Okay.
And so it's just a bunch of noise.
Yeah.
And when you have, like, ADD like I have, I can't focus on anything. I was trying to get ready for this podcast before I came, and Darcy's like, just go, because I kept yelling, getting the kids, like, quiet down, stop yelling, turn the TV down. She's like, why don't you just go and study somewhere else? It's like, I don't know. It's just, I want to hang out with my family without the noise. And still try to learn. It's like impossible, but
the noise.
Keep trying.
Yeah. All right. So this is kind of how it's thought of as today, how we use the word quiet, but we're going to jump into exploring this word in its usage in the Bible. And one thing to, actually a couple things to think about before we kind of jump into a word study and why it's some things are important to do. It's important to ditch your bias. Okay, we just talked about how we view quiet in English today. Okay, that's good to go over because it's going to be something we'll compare later. You know, as you're going through, you can kind of check back and compare it to say, is there a difference? You know, here, because that's going to be interesting to see and something to make note of. But when you're jumping in this and exploring, we need to take our bias and chuck it out the window because we want to see how the Bible uses the word.
Yeah.
Right? That's why we're doing a word study. If we wanted to know how English uses the word, we just did. You know, there's no reason to do the word study in the Bible, to simply just import your understanding in there. So we want to understand what the Bible means when it uses words. Okay, that's why you do a word study, is you're wanting to see how the Bible uses it, not how you do. Words can have a range of meanings, Okay, that's another thing to keep in mind. And this is called a semantic range, okay? Many words have a semantic range. And what do I mean by that? I mean, for instance, the word hard, okay? If I say, hey, this is hard, you might think, okay, it's solid, right? Yeah. This is a hard object. If I say this is hard cider, I don't mean the cider has become a block of wood, right? Or that this is a solid object. I mean that it has alcohol in it. Mm-hmm. It's hard cider. Or this is for the hard of hearing. I don't mean that their ears are hard, mm-hmm. right? That they become a solid. I mean that they can't hear.
Yeah.
So even in the word hard, there is a semantic range of meaning. And a lot of it depends upon the context, right? Okay, yep. How I'm using that defines what the word is. But to say that there was a one-for-one meaning is wrong.
Yep.
Right? There isn't. And in most to possibly every word, there is a semantic range mm-hmm. in English, yeah. and it's going to be the same as we explore the Bible.
I remember when I started studying Greek, and I would complain to Nathan. I'm like, well, why is this so why would one word mean multiple things? And he's like, you know the English language does that all the time.
We do it all the time, yeah.
So why are you surprised when Greek's doing that? And I guess it just, you don't think about it. You don't mm-hmm. think that we use the same words for so many different meanings.
Yeah.
Because we just know it. Mm-hmm.
We just know it.
Ingrained in our heads. We talk every day. We have these conversations. We don't have to learn it. We just know because it's part of our daily lives.
Yeah, we just take it for granted that this is a part of language and how we use it.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Until you try to learn another language. Then it's like,
then you're like, what are they doing?
Why would they do that? Why do they just one word mean one thing?
You do the same thing.
Yeah. Or you have like multiple words that mean the same thing. You're like, well, why would they do that? It's like, well, we do the same thing.
Yeah, we do the same thing. So it's important to know the range of meaning, the semantic range. And this is why in a word study, you can't just do one verse and be like, okay, I saw it used in the one verse. This is what it always has to mean. Or this is now a complete picture of the meaning of this word, and it's not. So you need to do a pretty long list, pretty long sampling. And you can do this through concordances, you know, there's books and stuff you can do to spot how much this word is if you want to study, you know, grace or you want to study faith or whatever. However, we're going to be doing this with quiet. And so, so know the range of the word and know the context to help you decide how the Bible's using this certain word. So when I did a search on quiet, being quiet, and I did it on the verb, okay, to be quiet, I saw that it was listed 45 times in the ESV translation. Now, depending upon your translation, this may differ, but in the ESV, it occurs 45 times in the whole Bible. So not, you know, super ton, I guess I would say compared to other words, but, you know, quite a bit. And
more than I think it would.
Oh, okay. More than you thought it would.
Yeah. I mean, I don't remember quiet being talked about much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's true. Yep. That's a good point. Yep. So 45 times. And then we're going to break it down. Okay. You have the English there. But here's the thing, the English can sometimes hide the words you're really looking for. Okay. So we want to know what the original word is here, okay? What are the words used for quiet? And this is you're asking a different question, really. And you're wanting to know what, when the Bible's going to talk about quiet, what's the word it usually uses in the original language? And so the word that it usually uses is the word in Hebrew, shakat, in the Old Testament. And then we'll see what it will be in the New Testament as we kind of explore. But for right now, we're going to focus on shakat, and that occurs 19 times. There's two other words that occur 3 times, so that's the next biggest. So obviously, shakat is the king, Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? That's obviously the main word that's being used here for quiet. But the other three, well, one of them is charash, and the other one is chasha. And they're pretty similar in meaning. Sometimes they're translated as silent, but they also share a similar usage as shakat will be used as well. Hmm. So there is a widespread use of how they're using quiet or silence, these types of words. And the others are, there are other words that also get translated as quiet in English, but they occur either once or twice. Mm. So, and most of them are just once. So it's not as prevalent as the shakat, which occurs 19 times of the 45. So then we're going to look at shakat. Okay, so we take the word that's used most, which is shakat, and now I'm going to look at how it's going to be translated in the ESV. And shakat is going to be used 18 times as quiet. Two times it'll be translated as quietness. One time is quietly, one time is quiet, 12 times as rest.
Hmm.
Okay, so there's a nuance there, right? You have quiet, but then it's also going to be used as rest 12 times. Then three times it'll be used as meaning to be still, or something is at ease, or something is calm, or something has settled. Okay, these are the other usage. So right away we're seeing that it's being translated in different ways throughout the Bible. Hmm. So this then kind of shows a problem. When I'm looking at the English version, it's going to translate this word in different ways. So here's the problem, is I'm really after the Hebrew word to understand how the Bible's using quiet. And so if I'm just focused on the English, I'm not going to see the whole picture of how the word's used. Right? Yeah. It's just going to show me quiet. When I'm just searching for when the Bible uses quiet, it's just showing me when the translators translated it as quiet. It's not going to show me the full range of how this word is really being used that's underlying the English there. And this is one of the dilemmas in not knowing the original language, is that you don't see these things as easily in the English, right? You would miss seeing, oh, when it says to be restful, that's the same word that I'm looking for here.
Yeah.
You wouldn't see that.
Yeah, it's kind of confusing. Like, if you didn't know that, and like, if you were actually starting to do word studies and then you recognize they're the same word, and that happens a lot, where there's a word that's interpreted differently throughout Scripture.
Yep.
And it's the same word, you just didn't know it.
Yeah, it's the same word and you don't realize it. Yep.
Or there's a word that's used over and over again that has a bunch of different like Greek or Hebrew words to represent it.
Yeah.
But it's the same word used in English.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, yeah, it's kind of what you really want to follow is the original language word and see how it's used. Mm-hmm. And so in our case, we're going to mainly focus on shakat, seeing how it's the kind of the dominant one there. So then I'm going to look in the lexicon to kind of see how it's going to be used. And it's used as rest or peaceful. To be peaceful is how shakat's going to be used. Or it's going to be used as someone who is trying to maintain peace, or someone who's trying to keep peace. They are doing shakat. So real quick, we're starting to like get weird here, right?
We're talking about the word quiet.
Yeah, we're talking about the word quiet, and real quick, it's starting to morph and change into something totally different, okay? When you are keeping quiet, you're trying to keep peace. You're trying to give someone peace when you're trying to do quiet to someone.
Hmm.
And that right away is really changing it. Now, sometimes it does have to do with sound.
Yeah.
Sometimes. But in the view of how the Bible is going to use this word, they also view it as giving peace to something or wholeness to something, okay? And so it also gets rid of anxiety, right, or uncertainty, and it gives the feeling of security and trust. That's what quiet does. Quiet gives the feeling of security and trust. And when we go to jump into some of these passages, you'll see this. You'll see how to be quiet is linked with trust, the word for trust. Mm-hmm. And we went over this word in the hope episode where we were talking about how hope really means like you have a solid trust in something, like you have trust in a fortress, mm-hmm. right? Like you feel very secure and safe inside a fortress. So that's the word there for trust and its meaning, but this word quiet also goes along with that, that when you have that trust and security, you also have this quiet as well. Hmm. To some groups, some different Bible passages, as we'll go through, it's this feeling of being quiet is to their detriment. They feel quiet in things you shouldn't feel trust in.
Hmm.
And they're feeling quiet in things that are actually not certain.
Yeah.
They should have felt quiet in God. And this is going to be talked about by the prophets, why Israel and these other nations were feeling quiet in these things that really weren't certain, that were really weren't going to last, when they should have felt quiet in Yahweh. So right away, we are getting a very different view of quiet, okay, where most of its usage seems not to have to do with sound.
Yeah.
Whereas most of our usage of quiet has to do with sound.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is changing stuff up a lot. So we're going to jump into some of the scripture here. And a lot of the scripture has in Joshua and Judges here, but also in like Chronicles and Kings, this word shakat is going to appear after battles or after like war campaigns and stuff like that, or after a bad guy, enemies defeated. Mm. Then it'll say the land had rest from war. And the word for rest is shakat. So then the land became quiet.
Yep.
From the war. And so shakat has a connection to war and this idea of turmoil, okay? That shakat is the opposite of war and turmoil and fighting, right? If you have shakat, you don't have the fighting and the turmoil and kind of the chaos there. You have shakat. Now, we would say peace,
mm-hmm.
right? We would connect that closely with peace.
Yep.
And if anyone knows the word shalom before, has heard that used, that's the word for peace or wholeness. And shakat and shalom are used real closely in meaning with each other, which is another interesting side to the word quiet. That also has this idea of shalom as well. And some other passages that are going to help us kind of broaden our idea is that we'll go to Isaiah here. And in Isaiah 32:17, Isaiah is going to talk about, and the effect of righteousness will be peace. So there's that shalom part. And the result of righteousness, quietness, and trust forever. So these things are talked about as good qualities, right? That there's this quietness that's going to happen, and it's the result of righteousness. So when righteousness is being done, its result, right, is that it creates quietness and trust. You have that security. Mm-hmm. And you'll have these things forever. And so that's another way to kind of broaden our mindset. To do righteousness, to do righteous things, brings about quiet. And this is a new way to understand it as well. A lot of times in here in Isaiah 57:20, quiet is going to be contrasted with the sea. So when the sea is mentioned a lot of times in the Old Testament, it's going to be mentioned in a negative light. The sea or waters are something that is scary, uncertain. It is something like chaos, right? Mm-hmm. It is a very bad place, the waters, okay, the sea. And so this is going to be in contrast to what quiet is.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, quiet is the opposite.
I mean, really, like the ocean's terrifying.
Yeah.
In every way.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Even when you're on a cruise boat just looking out, it's terrifying. Mm-hmm. And then you think of what creatures are
in the ocean. What creatures are in there.
It is scary as all get out. Yep. That's why even when we get to like, we go to the ocean, it's like, I don't want to go swimming there. Something's going to eat me.
Something's going to get me.
Yeah. It's terrifying.
Yeah. So again, it's not having to do with the sound. It's talking about how it's not at peace, mm-hmm. right? It's not something that you can put trust in. In Isaiah 57:20, it says, but the wicked are like the tossing sea, for it cannot be quiet, and its waters toss up the mire and the dirt and everything. And so wicked people are like the tossing of sea. They can't be mm-hmm. quiet. Okay, so wicked people cause turmoil. Again, there's this connection with the war earlier talked about. Wicked people cause chaos, they cause turmoil, they cause these problems, and so they can't be quiet, okay? So then those who are not wicked but righteous are those who can be quiet, right? They're people who cause things to become whole, things to become the opposite of chaos. You know, they're not shattering things into pieces, they're putting things back together. They're creating harmony where there was, you know, disharmony. And so this is kind of contrasted with the sea. The sea is not a quiet thing. And this, again, appears a lot. When you're seeing the sea there, they'll be talking about it not being quiet. And then God also talks about in Jeremiah that, you know, his sword can't be quiet. So, you know, it's just interesting that's kind of talked about because we're like, what was the sword being, you know, quiet about? That doesn't make sense. Yeah. But it does if this is the usage, right?
Yeah.
If this is how the Bible's using quiet, that does make sense, yeah. right? A sword is going to cause all kinds of war and can't, right? It's causing the destruction part.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas when it's quiet, you know, that's when things are peaceful. That's when things are whole
yep.
and not in chaos. Isaiah 62:1 is an interesting one because you kind of got the passage in 61 there where Jesus is going to read from in the New Testament when he's talking about the favorable year of the Lord and that, you know, the poor are going to be helped and everything like that, and those who, you know, are the oppressed and all that stuff are going to be helped. And then you go into chapter 62 here, verse 1, and it's kind of continuation of that prophecy of fulfillment, and says, for Zion's sake, I will not keep silent, and for Jerusalem's sake, I will not be quiet until her righteousness goes forth as brightness and her salvation as a burning torch. And so, you know, he's going to kind of explode through here in this, you know, fulfillment of what's going on. And then we have other passages in Ezekiel here, chapter 16, verse 49, says, behold, this was the guilt of your sister Sodom. She and her daughters had pride, excess of food, and prosperous ease, but did not aid the poor and needy.
Hmm.
Okay. So the prosperous ease, the word ease there, is the word shakat.
Hmm.
Okay. They were prosperously being quiet. You know, yeah. that wouldn't make sense. And so they translated it accordingly, so you would get it.
Yeah.
But that's the same word there for ease, is the word shakat. And it talks about how Sodom felt this shakat, even though the poor and needy were needed to be helped, right? But they weren't. And so they shouldn't have felt this ease. So this is the connection. If righteousness brings about shakat, Sodom was not doing the righteousness that was going to bring about shakat for the poor and needy, right? So they shouldn't have felt shakat because they weren't doing it, right? They weren't doing righteousness, so they shouldn't have felt that shakat when the poor and needy are in need of help, because everything is not whole. Everything is in harmony. Yep,
it makes sense.
And so it's messed up. And so that's how, you know, once again, it's being used there in that situation. And then Ezekiel goes on to talk about how people are feeling that they're secure. And he's like, you know, you guys are in definite danger. And they're like, no, you know, everything's going to be fine. We're going to be good. And he's like, nope, you know, you shouldn't be feeling quiet here. You shouldn't feel that things are going to be going well, because they're not. And then another passage is in Proverbs, and it's Proverbs 15:18, and it says, a hot-tempered man stirs up strife, but he who is slow to anger quiets contention. So again, of what we talked about is what quiet means, this makes sense.
Yep.
He's using, you know, it's being used here in a way that makes sense now. Again, not talking about sound. A hot-tempered man stirs up strife, right? Kind of going with that sea metaphor before of the churning of the waters, right? Mm-hmm. The churning of the waters and how it's not quiet, and a wicked person churns the water. A hot-tempered man stirs up the strife, right? He's creating that chaos again, creating the turmoil, the war, the problems. But the one who is slow to anger, this person quiets the contention. He's bringing quiet. And so this means that he's bringing the wholeness, he's bringing the peace to this situation. He's putting things in harmony. And so it's interesting because you can do quiet to things, right? That's a very weird way to use the word quiet. But in the Bible, you can do quiet to things. Mm-hmm. Things, people can cause quiet. And mainly it's through God, right? God is often doing the quiet. He can bring the quiet to the people. Mm, yeah. Don't trust in doing it with Egypt or, you know, these other countries that you think you can achieve this quiet. Only God can achieve this quiet and as we'll later talk about, because of the Holy Spirit and Christ in us, we are also to do quiet to things as well. But yeah, that we be slow to anger, and so then we can quiet the contention. And so right there is, we're being told of what to do, right? We are to be doing quiet to things. And so we'll kind of go into, you know, some questions here of, you know, where do we find, you know, our quiet as Christians? We've talked about how, you know, these passages the Bible uses quiet as a feeling along with security, right? Is that we find our quiet in the Lord, and quiet brings about harmony, but also the places like Sodom who thought they had quiet, but they really weren't doing it because they were neglecting the needy, the poor, and stuff like that, and how they found quiet in their wealth, right? Sodom, the people of Sodom are accused of finding quiet in their riches and their stuff and stuff like that. And so do we as Christians, do we find our quiet, our security, our you know, peace, our harmony, do we find those things in our wealth as Christians? Are we finding our quiet in our status? Do we find our quiet in our worldly government, right? Is that where we're feeling secure? Is like, well, I need this for our government, so I'll feel that quiet. Or are we looking into ourselves, right? I got to get this, so, you know, I got to figure this out for myself, or I just need to do this so that I can have this quiet. Or are we supposed to be looking to God as the only giver of real quiet who can do that through us? These are questions to be asking ourselves of where are we finding our quiet, our peace from. Now, as we kind of transition to the New Testament, we're going to transition to this word, esuxia. And this is the word that's used for shekat in the Septuagint, which is the Greek Old Testament. Okay, so there's a translation of the Old Testament into Greek from Hebrew.
Okay.
This is called the Septuagint, if our listeners don't know that. And so the word used there in Greek is exousia, and this is the word used for shekat most of the time. So that's why we're going with this, because we'll see it used in the same way in the New Testament. So if we follow exousia in the New Testament, we're going to see it appear here in 1 Timothy. And this is kind of important to see this transition in the Septuagint and then follow it into the New. The reason being is because the writers of the New Testament come from an Old Testament background. And so when they're going to be using how they think of the words that they're going to be using are going to be the ways that's used in the Old Testament, right? Because that's the way they know those words are used. And so when they use them in the New Testament, it's going to be in a similar way. So to understand their usage, you need to first know the Old Testament before you come into the New. And the way to follow that is you're going to have to see it in the Greek Septuagint, what that Greek word's going to be. Okay, so then when it pops up and they use it, you're like, okay, they're thinking this Hebrew word here for that.
All right, let me interject.
What's up?
First of all, thanks for taking us to school, because I didn't know any of this stuff. I didn't know any of this. This is all like new. And then I'm like, man, I know a verse in the New Testament. I'm thinking, I wonder if he's going to cover it. And it was the 1 Timothy 2:12. You're going to cover it.
I'm going to cover it.
So, I mean, what's amazing about this, though, is this changes everything.
It's going to change everything.
And this is one that would really fire people up, because this is a verse that's quoted.
In case you fell asleep.
Yes, that's right. This is where it gets exciting, okay? Because you're going to hear this verse, and this is a verse that men love in the church, and this is where women are excluded, and the word quiet's in it. And so, Nathan, keep going.
Okay.
I didn't talk in like 20 minutes. I had to say something.
No, that's good.
I just did the, yep. Oh, yep. Yep. Okay. Sounds good.
Sounds good, Nathan. Yep. Whatever you say. Yep. Heresy, okay.
I wasn't sleeping, I swear. Yeah, this is going to sound very heretical, I know.
Okay.
Go ahead.
So, anyways, so we're going to follow this over. This is the same word being used. And it's really important to do that in the Septuagint to find what its word is. You know, make sure you get the right word, because you can't just, you know, be like, I think it's this one. You know, it's a lot better to have like some solid evidence for what you're doing as you're following it through. So we're going to follow exousia as it goes into 1 Timothy 2:2 here. And so, yeah, coming into this chapter, it says, for kings and all who are in high positions, that, well, I'll just start with verse 1. I'm going to start with verse 1. So this, you know, kind of makes more sense in context. Okay. So it says, first of all, then, I urge that supplications, prayers, intercessions, and thanksgivings be made for all people, for kings and all who are in high positions, that we may lead a peaceful and quiet life, godly and dignified in every way. And this is good, and it is pleasing in the sight of God, our Savior. We've mentioned this in, I think, the president one.
We did. The first spot. Yeah, the first one we were recording. Yep. This was there, yeah.
So this is a little repeat of the passage popping up again. But so the word there for quiet, life. Guess what it is? Mm-hmm. It's the same word. Okay, so how it's being used here, and it's being used by Paul, who was a definite, right, Old Testament study, sure, right? Yeah. We know about his credentials and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know, big deal. Big deal. Pharisee of the Pharisees, he said, he calls himself, right? He's a guy who knows it. So how he's using these words is going to be definitely 100% in the same line of how quiet is used in the Old Testament. And talking about, you know, praying for these leaders and interceding for all people and for kings and the people in high positions so that we may be lead a peaceful and quiet life, okay? Again, we are not to cause rebellions. And this is what this is really applying to, is not causing rebellions or causing strife or war. We are trying to do quiet to things, okay? We are trying to be the peacemakers, right? Blessed are the peacemakers, right? This goes along with that. And right here, we have peaceful and quiet together, just like we had it in the Old Testament, bringing shalom. And the other Greek word there is the word in the Septuagint for shalom. That's for peaceful right there. And so you have the peaceful and the quiet. And are we bringing wholeness to the chaos that's going on, you know, with the kings or the high positions or whatever? And are we living this godly life, right? Because this is what God does. He brings peace and quiet to things. And so we also are to do that. So you might not have known, but you are commanded to be quiet. You are told to do this. And then kind of going through it, the rest of the chapter, it talks about a lot in Timothy talks about, you know, these people who aren't like listening. There's people who are apparently teaching heretical things going on where Timothy's at. And Timothy is dealing with all these people who are going against him. That's what you get from the letter, that there's sort of this rebellious spirit that's going on with people there. And, you know, how he's to address the heresies and stuff, that's all talked about by Paul. And Paul makes sure that the people know that he has the backing behind him, that Paul's saying, hey, I'm backing Timothy. Okay, and that's why he's mentioning this word quiet here in the beginning. So then as we're working our way through, we get to 1 Timothy 2:12, which says, I do not permit a woman to teach or to exercise authority over a man. Rather, she is to remain quiet. Okay, once again, it's the same word there, okay, that she is to be quiet. So thinking of the context of how this word is used, does it have to do with sound, right? This is the question. Does it have to do with sound? Especially when you're looking at everything in between two to leading up to 12, right? It's talking about in 2:8, it says, I desire that in every place the men should pray lifting holy hands without anger or quarreling, right? Why is it talking about all these terms that there's like discord going on? Because there was, right? And he's mentioning to them what they're to be as Christians. You guys are to be quiet. And he's reminding the women, who apparently must have been having a problem with this. One, they were adorning themselves with outrageous attire, right, was one part of it. And he's like, guys, you shouldn't be focusing on stuff and wealth, right? That's not where we find our quiet, right?
Yep.
We're supposed to be finding it in godliness and good works. He talks about that in verse 10. And then he says, let a woman learn quietly. What is he talking about? She's not to be contentious. She's not to be stirring up problems. She's not to be like the sea, right? She's not to be causing war and strife. And this is what this whole passage has to do with, is that these people aren't stirring up problems and that they are to be submissive, right? That's why the next word there is has to do with submissiveness. You aren't to be rebellious, right? You are to be submissive. And he's urging the people to listen to Timothy, right? Don't let everybody look down on you because you're young. Like, there's a reason he's saying, talking about all these issues, is because this is what was going on. Yeah. There was a lot of rebellion, a lot of strife going along, a lot of people who were saying they're the teachers and were teaching things that weren't right and didn't have the authority. And so that's what he's talking about. And then this all leads into verse 12, where he's talking about, hey, she is to remain quiet. And he's, and then he mentions their authority there. And again, it's about being peaceful, not causing contention, not causing strife. But does it have to do with sound?
Right. I think
that's the misunderstanding.
Yeah.
Is that so? How
Nathan, the
Bible
liberal is? Scholar over here, some people might think he's trying to do, which obviously he's not. We had no, there was no purpose to like give women more credence to talk in the church. It's to just show that out of context, I mean, we take this differently because we take it as the word quiet, which in context obviously doesn't mean what we think it meant.
Yeah.
We thought it meant that women should just be quiet. They shouldn't talk.
Yeah.
Because that's the English translation of that is women need to be quiet. And when we joke, as we do with our friends, is like, yeah, women, be quiet in church.
You know, like, I mean, maybe Mike does. Yeah. If you want to email him at...
That's true. I just joke.
At Mike Beach.
Never have met it. My wife has every right to talk. She's brilliant.
Yeah.
But, yeah, this is one of those verses that, like, right now we're speaking heresy probably in some people's minds. Is like, how dare you say that?
I mean, it comes up in 1 Peter 3:4, again, in the same way. It's as we've been talking about, but let your adorning be, and he's talking to women. He says, but let your adorning be the hidden person of the heart with the imperishable beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is in God's sight is very precious.
Yeah.
So once again, commanded to be quiet, you know, but Peter flushes it out a little more by adding spirit to it, right?
Sure.
Trying to help you along in the understanding as to what he's saying. And so, yeah, this is what the word quiet means. Are you bringing harmony? Are you bringing things together, right? Or are you tearing stuff apart?
Yeah.
Are you causing fighting? And this study happened... or kind of occurred to me a while back, and it was because I was reading, like, in an early church passage, he's talking about how Christians are to act in church. So this is one of the early church fathers, and he's saying that the people need to be silent and loving and something else when they come to church, and I was like, silent? Like, well, that's weird. Why would he use it in connection with, like, loving and these other, like, character traits.
Yeah.
And you're like, what does that have to do with it? And that kind of sparked the study of, like, well, maybe I don't understand how quiet's used. And then that, you know, showed, like, oh, wow, you know, it means something totally different than what I thought. And we have the... Didacta here in 3:7 through 8, this is another early church writing. It says, but be meek, since the meek shall inherit the earth. Be long-suffering and pitiful and guileless and quiet and kindly and always fearing the words which you have heard. So again, quiet being used there in the similar sense, not talking about silence, it's linked with all these other character traits of long suffering and being kind. These are things that are going to achieve quiet. So,
nice.
A takeaway here is that as Christians, how are we doing quiet to the different things of our life, right? When there's a fight at work, right? When there are these times of contention or arguing, are we interceding there, right? Yeah. As Paul was saying, right? Intercession on behalf of all people. Are we praying? Are we hoping things come to wholeness? And are we doing something about it? Are we doing quiet to things? And these are things we are told to do in the Bible. We are to be people who are quiet and are doing quiet.
Very good. Well, and what helps me, for some reason, every time I hear the word quiet, I think of quiet. Even if you keep explaining it. But when I think of the opposite is chaos.
Yeah.
That seems to help me understand.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. If something's chaotic, mm-hmm. we need to bring it to mm-hmm. a quiet or a peace.
Right. Yep.
So when you see chaos, mm-hmm. how can you be the peacemaker? How mm-hmm. can you quiet the situation? Yep.
Absolutely.
Be the person to quiet it. Mm-hmm. And if you're causing the chaos, then you're really in the fault. Like, you need to fix that.
You need to be quiet.
Be quiet. Yes. I'm going to yell at someone. If they ever start causing chaos, I'm going to be like, quiet.
Quiet. Yeah. Quiet.
And they're going to look at me like, you just tell me to shut up? I'm like, no. I'm trying to bring peace to this chaotic moment.
Yep.
Boom. And then I'll tell them, listen to the podcast because I can't explain it. There's a lot here in that word.
Be a plug.
It's a good word. All right. Well, cool. All right. Well, thanks for listening. There is hundreds of thousands of millions and billions and zillions of podcasts out there. There's not that many, but there's a lot. But you chose to listen to ours.
If you have any questions, concerns, or ideas regarding our podcast, please email us at thirdoptionpodcast@gmail.com.
If you like our podcast, share it with a friend or give us a like wherever you're listening.
Keep fighting the good fight of faith, and thanks for listening to the Third Option Podcast.